Hello, and welcome to FinTech Impact. I'm your host, Jason Pereira. Today on the show, we have Mark Gilbert, co-founder and CEO of Zox Communications. Zox Communications is a new platform that is specifically designed to be an artificial intelligence-driven meeting assistant for financial advisors. And with that, here's my interview with Mark. Mark, thanks for the time today.
Thanks, Jason.
So Mark Gilbert of Zox, tell us about Zox Communications.
So Zox is very simple. We use AI to capture all the important information from financial advisors or planners' meetings with clients, and we give them all those facts in a very structured way so they can follow up with clients and have the data they need in 5 minutes or less after a meeting.
Okay. So before we dive in, I'm just going to say the fact you used AI and simple in the same sentence is hilarious, but let's go into it. So tell me about the origin of the company.
Yeah. So before this, I was at a company called Twilio, which is a lower level kind of developer APIs for communications, real-time communications. And there we saw the need more and more for people wanting to look inside the communications. So Twilio makes it really easy to program and connect with your clients. There's a number of enterprise scenarios where people wanted to get data from the conversations. And so we started Zox a little under 2 years ago, I guess a little over a year and a half ago. And
well, I mean, really, in fairness, large language models have only been a thing for about 18 months. So time is...
Yeah, so we actually started before LLMs, and thankfully they've accelerated us for sure. But with the goal really of getting data out of these systems and also having a lot of security and privacy around it. So we started with a few different industries and focused in on financial services quite quickly just because of the draw there. And then my co-founder and I and most of the founding team have some background building systems in that area. So we understood it pretty well.
Fantastic. All right. So let's start diving in here. So tell me about the experience. I'm an advisor. I want to utilize you. What does it look like?
Yeah. So we really have two different experiences based on whether you're doing it virtually or in person. In person, it's super easy. You either on your laptop or on your mobile phone, just start Zox. It will listen to the conversation. It doesn't record it, but it'll essentially listen to the information, analyze it, and pull the facts out that we think are important to you. And it's pretty similar with virtual meetings. So if you're on Zoom as an example, two different options there. Either there'll be an assistant that joins, which is a computer. It's not a person. And you can name that. So it can say something like, you know, this is Jason's note taker, Jason's assistant. It'll listen. Or we can also process recordings for advisors and planners who are already recording. So if you already record your Zoom call or team calls or things like that, we can process those. But by default, what happens is we essentially join that call and listen to the information there.
Excellent. Okay, so you know, let's just address the elephant in the room on this. I mean, a lot of these platforms are basically building in their own meeting notation systems. Like Zoom's got a pretty good summary tool. Yeah. There are other competitors on the market that are more not targeting financial advisors, just broad-based, like the likes of Otter, or the other one, or Fathom. You know, what about Zox makes it specific to this industry?
Yeah. So what we see is the output of these is very different. And the way I like to describe it to people is, you know, if you're talking with a lawyer, there's typically a paralegal in the room taking notes. If you're talking to a financial advisor, it's typically them or an associate, you know, taking notes. And the information they capture is very different from a general person. So the general purpose note takers are great, we think, for like a lot of corporate meetings. You know, if you've missed something and you want a summary. But typically what financial advisors want out are the types of specific pieces of information around assets, cash flow, you know, insurance, profiles, risks, goals, all of those things. So we can pull all that out to make it very easy for them. Because we have that information in a structured way, we can also generate and help them follow up with clients a lot quicker by generating a draft email for them that they, you know, tweak and edit. And then we can also look across different meetings and things like that to start to look for patterns for things like, you know, where clients may have life events that you may want to reach out to more or treat differently, or even things that could potentially put a client at risk for a, you know, leaving. And so because we have all the data structured, we essentially are mapping the data from the conversations and then starting to format and apply it to the workflows that financial advisors do versus, you know, if you look at a general purpose system, they're really good for getting summaries and they're also really good for, frankly, putting you at ease so that if you don't get to it for a few days, you can still go back and read through it all and read through a transcript. But what we see is it's still taking people over half an hour to use those systems and follow up properly. And we really want to get that down to like 5 minutes, which is what we're able to do now.
Yeah, amusingly, it's basically the same value proposition that the industry is telling advisors to have, which is to niche, right? At the end of the day, the context. I mean, I've said this about when I've talked to multiple companies about this. The LLM being asked to do everything in the universe is going to make it a jack of all trades, master of none. The context got that basically the same kind of conversation thrown at it over and over and over again. is going to be a level of mastery, just like a human being. So it makes a lot of sense. Okay, so that's, so bottom line is listens in, turns around, spits out notes, notes look good. Talk to me about, it doesn't end there, right? Like what else are you doing with the notes?
Yeah, so right now we're capturing this data and putting it in our systems, giving it obviously to the advisors so they can follow up quickly. The big three other areas that we see from this, one is that we can start to help advisors with client communications over time as well. So right now, if you think about it, we're really dealing with individual meetings. But if you look at a household over the course of the year and how often you talk with them, potentially in reviews, potentially in one-off meetings, we can also then start to do things like draft, like an annual letter for them or things like this that people have asked us to, because we know generally what's going on. So that's a big one. And just frankly, helping advisors with communication. And what that result is they can communicate with clients more, remind them the value they're providing with not a lot of time on their side, which is great. The other thing is we do, as I mentioned, have a lot of data from what we see comes up in conversations before other areas, right? So if there are, as an example, potential strains on a relationship in a family, if there's potential health issues, these things, you almost always will see these in conversations with advisors if they're closely trusted. And those are very key points for things like money in motion events and just making sure that you're frankly spending extra time with the client at that point and helping to plan. And so we can start to flag those things. Again, things that advisors will naturally do when they look at it, but it's hard if they're busy all day. And what we really want to do is enable them to use some of their staff to help with these things as much as possible. And then the other huge one for us is also just getting all of the data that you would typically want for, you know, in the US, like Reg BI and those types of things into a format that's very easy to capture. So instead of like filling these things out manually and having a variety of different notes, we can essentially take the same data and format it in a variety of different ways. So it's very easy if someone is doing a review to just pull the records on that review. But ultimately, our goal is to have the advisor, frankly, spend their time with clients, focused on the clients and advising, and have all of the back office and data entry accelerate as much as possible. So following up with workflows, if someone needs to like open an RSP account and there's certain data that needs to get in there, we can start to also figure out what data that is and what we already have and start to get that data into backend systems like, you know, the CRM systems or task management systems. We're not quite there yet, but with the platform we have and the structure we have, that's where we're going, frankly.
Okay. So talk to me about how you're structuring the data. It's not simply, like you said, you're organizing, you're extracting things. Like, talk to me how, what it is you're looking for, how you're extracting, how you're organizing it, and how you're structuring so that downstream you're going to be able to act on this.
Yeah, it's a really good question. We spent quite a lot of time on this. So there's a variety of different things we do, but at the highest level, you can think of this as us extracting facts from the conversation. And so there's a variety of different facts that we capture, but at a high level, there's financial information. So, you know, like assets, cash flow, all of those types of things that you would, I think, typically expect. And what we'll do is we'll listen and we'll basically grab all those facts. Similarly, there's a set of personal information that we care a lot about, and we'll grab a lot of those facts and, you know, what's there. And that can be both things that would affect their profile and their planning, but also simple things that just help you maintain a relationship, right? Like maybe it's someone's granddaughter's birthday this weekend and they bought them something, or they're going to go, you know, go-karting with someone and you just want to remind them next time you chat with them or ask them how things went. And then we also essentially hold what I would consider conversational data. So essentially what flow is the conversation and all of that information as well. And then that for us, depending on the results we want out, can go through stages. So you can think of this as almost a large fact table. We'll filter that fact table because frankly, AI is not very good at deciding what's important and what isn't always. So like, you know, my laptop is technically a financial asset, but no planner or advisor cares about my laptop. But if I talk about it, it'll show up. And so we filter that out. And then we essentially can also like take that data and really format it into the right structure for these follow-on workflows, right? Whether that's like just simply a list of things that are coming out, whether that's like capturing client concerns, whether that is like follow-up meetings and when those are and needing to pull those out as dates, any of those types of things. So we can really get it down to essentially any structure we need to on the back end system.
Okay, so let's talk about those follow-ups and those follow-ons and the structure of them. Like besides being in your system, like is this being used, integrated right now to basically synchronize the CRMs or calendars or to any kind of potential other downstream workflows on their platforms?
Yeah, so today what we do, and like we're just launching right now, so we've been focusing all of our time really on getting the data to the quality and the structure that we want. So people using the system, what they're doing is they're going in, they're looking at it. They typically will scan it. They can add little annotations if they want, if there's like specific things that are more important, less important, or just scratch things out. And then they will take that and basically copy and paste it into a CRM system or other downstream systems. Now that we're done that, the next phase for us is to start integrating with these systems. So we have what are called REST APIs today. So essentially lower level APIs where people can call. And we have a few customers doing that where they will call our APIs to get the data out of the system. But what we're working on now is the direct integration with those. And it's not just like a CRM, if you think about it that way, because a lot of these systems will take like a summary of a meeting and put it into a meeting activity into CRM, which is helpful, but is actually not really helpful long-term to like mine for data and things like that. So all of these different intelligence results, we call them these building blocks, those end up typically in different downstream systems. So as an example, you know, action items for the advisor, the client will typically end up in tasks in a CRM system. More of a write-up on the notes will end up just in a meeting activity as you normally would, just so you have a record of it and understand what happened. And then we can take things like their profile, and we think we're going to be able to start diffing that with both planning systems as well as the CRM system to say, here's everything we know about Jason. What's changed, right? Like what's changed since the last discussion? So if someone is talking to me as an advisor, probably every time they'll know I live in San Francisco currently, they know that I have two kids, and that will come up again and again, but it's not new for an advisor that's been working with me. And so we really also want to be able to do the delta and then integrate into those. And I would say that the default systems for us, the big three areas, CRM is obviously a huge one. There's a number of like what we would call automation systems. So like a Zapier, maybe even a Hubly, those types of things. And then planning systems as well. And getting them in.
Well, that kind of makes sense. You're the top of the funnel, right? So that makes
sense. Just kind of flow it down. That's exactly as we think about it too.
Yeah. So, I mean, let's talk about a couple of things that are clearly concerns here, but not addressed enough. The security aspects of this. I'm going to say from two standpoints. A, I've already spoken on large language models more times than I can count now. And one of the first things I say is, please, to God's sake, do not put private information into a large open protocol. Like, there's people already figured out how to extract this information, which is not good.
Yeah.
And the second piece is, given that you're looking at a multi-jurisdictional software solution here, you're trying to sell this elsewhere, how do you architect around this? So first piece, the large language model. Second piece, the jurisdiction.
Yeah. So the first piece for us is really, so we won't use any models that train, like any LLMs that would train from our data at all. And we also can send different data to different LLMs, but frankly, some of them are very good at some things and not very good at other things. So we're trying to be as agnostic as possible on that. We have a set of providers that we trust a lot, and we have things in place with them. So that one is handled essentially from a training point of view. And if they're not training, they can't really extract your data out of it. Because to your point, there's been a number of examples where like someone from a large company will put in like, you know, a bunch of whatever confidential plans, and then someone will ask the model for like that company's plans and it will produce them. So we want to make sure that all that's extremely private. And then on the other side around jurisdiction, so the platform for us has been built from the ground up from when we started the company as being fully geofenced and controlled by organizations. And so what happens by default is we have a number of different cloud providers that we can use. We have the default one. We typically will sit in Amazon for a lot of things and Azure, but it actually can be located and moved around in different, you can think of them as almost like both jurisdictions from a geographic point of view, as well as cloud providers and essentially like the security context that it's sitting in. So in the US, for our US customers, we'll put everything in the US. We have deployments in Frankfurt right now. So essentially for the EU, we do that there. We also have it in London, and then we're adding Canada very shortly, actually. And the whole system is essentially architected to do that because each organization for us, so for us, any like advisory practice would be an organization. They're heavily independent. They can sit in their own spots and essentially do what they want to do. And that's been a very strong design point for us from the start, as some of our initial customers are also medical customers. So in the US, we're HIPAA compliant and have those things. And it's a similar kind of set of requirements that we can keep. And there's a whole set of things underneath that as well as like auto logs, very advanced fine grain access control and those types of things.
Yeah, I mean, you played this game before where you were before being a big protocol. So I mean, like, I think you, from the outside in, looking at this, right, when you were
at Hearsay for a while, we had to deal with this all the time.
Twilio, thank you.
Twilio,
yeah. Right? Like the fact that you were there before, and that's just a large library of protocols, really. I mean, you built the end state, but also, I mean, you've really thought this through in terms of everything on the back end and where it's going to go and making yourself a protocol more than anything else. And again, when you're doing that, especially at scale, especially jurisdictionally, you have to architect a certain way in order to basically make sure both privacy and regional laws are adhered to. Yeah. So, I mean, telephony is one of the areas where that is very, very present. You know, advisory practices also have the same challenge. So, makes sense. All right.
Yeah,
so
that's exactly right.
this is the current stage of the game. And let's face it, it's early. You may have started before large language models were a thing and they helped accelerate you. But talk to me about where you see it going from here beyond what you discussed. Like, what are your aspirations for this?
Yeah, so our goal, and we think for the next long while, the best that AI is going to do in this space is really accelerate people. So we don't really see it. I know there's been a lot of concern around replacing people and, like, you know, it's the advisor's job and all that. I like knowing these systems very deeply and just understanding how kind of clients work with advisors, right? The trust that an advisor has is essentially like what they're selling that and their, you know, ability to understand the person deeply. And so our view is that there is still a huge amount of time spent on, frankly, like just putting in data, talking with people, but like having to type things and just frankly, manual things. And we think what an advisor really wants to do is spend time with their client, come out of that, see all the relevant data, and essentially just say yes, or, you know, yes, 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 no, no, no. And then have that flow through the backend system. So that, as I mentioned, is kind of our first big phase. And there's a lot of work we still have to get to that vision. But the second one for us is almost always, and you've seen this in a variety of other businesses, once you have better data, there's a whole bunch of things that you can do, right? So if you could look across your clients and say, okay, over the last 8 years, right? Like how have their goals changed? How have their, you know, how have their concerns changed? Are they more relaxed, more worried? Are they even doing the things that we're asking them to do between meetings, right? Have they progressed? Have they not? How has their family situation changed? And if you can think of not just like answering those questions for a client, because a lot of advisors probably could if they think back to their clients, but actually having that data to the point where you could query it and say, okay, what are the patterns? Like who has changed? Who hasn't? What should we be doing? There's a huge amount, we think, really to be able to serve more clients, but also serve them better with that data because you can now proactively reach out to them when they most likely need things, which is really what they're looking for, right? They really want someone to handle these things for them. Like understand them deeply and then handle these things for them. And so we'll continue to work through that. But the financial services space has such a, I would say it's very workflow heavy and very backend heavy on these systems, right? So if you think of like everything going into the custodial systems and all that, there's a huge amount there that we can go do overlaying these different things. And what we believe is that probably about 10, 15 years ago, a lot of the more kind of like what we would think of as account data was already put into these structures, right? Like if you think of like hooking up accounts to a Plaid or something and getting that data into a system and robo-advisors, a lot of those things started to get structured that way. But this kind of more personal communication data is the next big phase for us. And that we think we can do just frankly very amazing things as we do that. And so you'll start to see this concept of agents where, you know, like it's not just that we're grabbing information from a conversation, but we're actually able to help open that account for them. We're able to say, hey, there's these 20 pieces of information. We have 18. Like, we'll mail them on your behalf, or you can just like click a button and hit it. We'll ask them for the remaining two. When they mail us back in very natural language, we can grab that and fill out the rest of the thing and kind of watch it continue down the pipeline so that the clients are getting what they need without like no advisor. And frankly, most of their staff don't want to be mailing clients every 2 days, just being like, hey, did you do this? Did you fill out this form? You know, so all. Yeah, we can really do. And I think we think that with this, we can help with a lot of that information, you know, take that and marry it with the data in the CRM systems and the account systems to frankly really automate a lot and help out a lot.
There is a ton of potential for all of that. And at the end of the day, you know, as much as we've been very rich with data around the client accounts and basically financial plans and all this other stuff, even though it may not be integrated the way we need it to be, but the top of funnel has been a more broken piece of the entire stream, I would say. So there's quite a lot of potential here. So before we wrap up, there's three questions I'd like to ask everybody to end on a positive note. First one is, if you had one wish for something to change in your company, the industry as a whole, what would it be?
That's a good question. I think for me, this is a little self-serving, but I do think just adopting technology, people will like just seeing more of that and people being a little bit more exploratory with it will really help, honestly, clients and frankly, help advisors a lot as well. It's something where we see a lot of people banging their heads with old systems and old technologies in ways they just don't need to be doing.
Okay.
Some advisors are very good at that, but quite a lot are not. So I think that's a huge one for me. That's probably the single biggest driver, if you will.
Excellent. So, funny enough, as far as the issues come, the problem is that there's a lot more legacy than people want to admit to, but it is what it is. The second question is, what's been the biggest challenge in the company to where it is today?
The biggest challenge for us, I think, in all of these situations is actually taking the technology and mapping it to the real world scenarios. So I'll give you just a few examples of these. And any one of these is solvable, but the challenge is ultimately getting through all of them so that the advisor's life is easy. Like as we talked at the start, you know, you can just turn our system on, it'll listen to you and, you know, figure out what's going on. When you zoom into that, like we see a lot of in-person meetings. In those meetings, we need to figure out like who's who, like who's talking, how many people are in that room, how many are talking. If you get on something like Zoom by default, Zoom will tell us if there's two people in a Zoom window that it's the same person. There's just all these like details that when you actually get into financial planning in real life becomes very challenging to actually do and make smooth. And I think for people who have played with these large language models and these like GPTs, it's very easy to play with them and see interesting things. It is extremely hard to actually get them running reliably across a whole set of scenarios that are just real world, right? And so one of our first early adopter customers like was sitting in a dining room with three generations of a family in that room. There's probably about five or six people. The middle generation was on Zoom on a laptop on the table. And you can imagine just going through that and like grandkids running through and talking and trying to figure out what's going on. And it sounds funny, but those details are extremely hard to work through and get working. But when you do, it just creates the quality and the dependability of the system a lot more. So I think that's been probably the largest single technical challenge, honestly, is pulling all the pieces together well.
Excellent. And the last question I have for you is basically what gets you excited and keeps you getting out of bed in the morning to keep on fighting the good fight?
So for me, if you think about it, like all of these things that we're doing now is the possibilities are frankly endless. And so the two things that really get me fired up are just what we can do with these technologies. And these technologies are accelerating very quickly, right? Like even to your point, like 18 months ago, they were barely out there. You know, even 12 months ago, the quality of that to now is very different. So I'm very excited about what we can do. And then the other huge piece for me, which couples with that is as we've talked to advisors and have early adopters on the program, they're just really excited, right? Like we talked to someone last week who was like, this is like Christmas every day. He's like, I used to have to do 2 hours every night doing these things. And he's like, now I just go home and my team logs into the morning, looks at the stuff and goes. And so that's super exciting. I think whenever we see these technologies, I've always been kind of a software engineer and building things. And so seeing these technologies and actually getting them into a spot where they can help people out day to day and save them time and frankly, save time on things they don't like doing is super exciting for me. So that's the biggest positive. Like whenever we get a positive note from a client, it just makes us all kind of smile and keep going.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it.
Cool. Thanks a lot, Jason.
So that was my interview with Mark Gilbert of Zox Communications. Hope you enjoyed that. And if you're looking for a virtual assistant to record your notes, take a look. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please review on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Until next time, take care.
This podcast was brought to you by Woodgate Financial, an award-winning financial planning firm catering to high-net-worth individuals and their families. To learn more, go to woodgate.com. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play, or find more episodes at jasonpereira.ca.